Good morning. I'm excited this morning. I get to take part in this series we've been doing on the life of David. And if you have your paper Bibles with you this morning, you can open them to 2 Samuel. We're going to be reading a story this morning and talking about worship. But first, I'm going to start with a question and an example from my own life. So my question is, have you ever done something in your life that made you look foolish, that you thought ruined your chances at something? For example, my example is the very first time that I met my wife. I met Kaylee in college in my second year, and she played on a worship band. She played bass, and I hadn't ever talked to her, but I always kind of liked her from afar. I thought she was really pretty, and she was really cool. You know, girl bass players are cool. And I just kind of liked her from afar, but I'd never talked to her before until Christmas that year. I saw her carrying some boxes up these stairs with some other people, and I thought, this is my chance. I can, first of all, make myself look like I'm a helpful person, and also, this is an opportunity to show how great my muscles are and how strong I am, and show off a little bit. So I was like, I'm gonna do it. So I went and I waited by the stairs when she came up, and I introduced myself and I was like, hey, I see you're carrying stuff, can I help? And she's like, sure. So she took me to the room where they were like hauling stuff out of, and I went, and there's all these shelves, and I went and found like the biggest box I could find, the heaviest one, and I picked it up. And because it was really heavy, I had to like step back and you know, get a good stance on. But I stepped back too far, and there was this metal shelf behind me, and it must have been made of like aluminum or something really light, because it just like toppled over, and it was full like on all the shelves of boxes, and this thing goes flying, and it just like just misses this guy who's standing there, and it smashes into the ground with this huge crash, and the boxes on the shelf just go everywhere, and the stuff inside the boxes go everywhere, and it's this disaster. And as I knock it over, I'm like, oh, what am I doing? And so then I backed up like this, and there's like this Slurpee machine behind me, and I like knocked this Slurpee machine over. Thankfully, I dropped the box I was holding and grabbed the Slurpee machine before the glass shattered everywhere, which was kind of cool. But that was my wife's very first impression of me. I made an absolute fool of myself and thought my chances with her were ruined that day. Like, oh, she's never going to talk to me again. And she didn't for a couple months. And I think she might have just like forgot that I was that guy that knocked over the stuff when she did start talking to me, so it worked. But I thought my chances were ruined. In the story that we're going to read this morning, it's in 2 Samuel 6, and David acts like a fool, and he is criticized for it, and we're gonna read that. Before we get to it, you can open up to chapter 6. I'm going to give you guys some background on what's happened right before this. So a couple of decades before this happens, there's this thing called the Ark of the Covenant, which is this really, really important thing to Israel. And the Ark of the Covenant was this symbol of God's presence with his people, and it was super important. They would take it into battles with them as this symbol that God was with them and God was going to win the battle for them. There was one story, and it was a couple decades before this, where they go into battle against the Philistines and they're losing, so they go and get the Ark and they think it's going to save them. But they lose the battle and the Philistines take the Ark and they take it back to their country and they have it in their cities, and it's just like causing all these problems. People are like getting tumors and people are getting like really sick, and there's these plagues. And finally the Philistines are like, Israel's God is crazy. We got to get rid of this thing. And so they take the ark and they put it on a cart and they put two oxen in front of the cart, and then they just are like, get out of here. And they send the Ark of the Covenant on its way. And it makes its way to this Israelite town, and these Israelites find it. They're overjoyed. They take it and it's put in this house of a Levite, and he keeps it. And for the next like 20 years in Israel's history, we don't hear about it. It's kind of forgotten. And so this is before Saul was king. So in the meantime, while Israel's forgotten about the ark, Saul is made king of Israel, the very first king. And, you know, David is promised that he's going to be the king because God rejects Saul and he chooses David. But David waits a long time for Saul. Eventually, Saul dies. But when David, you think he's going to be the king of Israel, all of a sudden, Saul has this son who's named Ish-bosheth. And Ish-bosheth crowns himself king of Israel. And the southern part of Israel called Judah, they're loyal to David. And so they crown David as their king. And then ensues this like civil war for the next like 7.5 years between Israel and Judah where they fight amongst themselves. And then finally there's like all these crazy assassinations and people die. And all of a sudden people realize, wait, David is the king that we actually want. And so Israel crowns David as king. And Israel and Judah are united again. And David like takes out the Philistines that are harassing them, and there's like peace in Israel again, and the start of David's reign as king of Israel. And so David recaptures Jerusalem, and he destroys the Philistines, and then he decides something. He's like, I am gonna go, and I'm gonna go get the ark and bring it to Jerusalem as a symbol that God is with us, and God is gonna be a part of my kingship. So that's where our story begins. David decides to do this. So we're going to read in 2 Samuel chapter 6. We're going to read the first 11 verses right now. It says this, "Then David again gathered all the elite troops in Israel, 30,000 in all. He led them to Bala of Judah to bring back the Ark of God, which bears the name of the Lord of Heaven's armies, who is enthroned between the cherubim. And they placed the Ark of God on a new cart, and they brought it from Abinadab's house, which was on a hill. Uzzah and Ahio, Abinadab's sons, were guiding the cart that carried the Ark of God. Ahio walked in front of the Ark. David and all the people of Israel were dancing before the Lord, singing songs and playing all kinds of musical instruments, lyres, harps, tambourines, castanets, and cymbals. But when they arrived at the threshing floor of Nacon, the oxen stumbled, and Uzzah reached out his hand and steadied the Ark of God. Then the Lord's anger burned against Uzzah, and God struck him dead because of this. So Uzzah died right there beside the Ark of God. Now David was angry because the Lord's anger had burst out against Uzzah, and he named that place Perez Uzzah, which means to burst out against Uzzah, as it is still called today. David was now afraid of the Lord, and he asked, how could I ever bring the Ark of the Lord into my care? So David decided not to move the Ark of the Lord into the city of David. Instead, he took it to the house of Obed-Edom of Gath, and the Ark of the Lord remained there in Obed-Edom's house for 3 months, and the Lord blessed Obed-Edom and his entire household. So, this is kind of a weird passage, right? If you've never read this story before, it's kind of shocking. Even if you have read it before, it's kind of shocking, right? This man is just struck dead because he reaches out to touch the Ark. And it's something we have to wrestle with, and it's a little bit tricky. But I think before we get to Uzzah and him touching the ark, we have to deal with some irreverence from someone else first. And that is David. And I think it'll help us put all of this in context. We see at the start of this story, David has this desire to bring the ark to Jerusalem. And it's actually a really good desire. You know, he has a genuine heart for God, and he wants God to be a part of what he's doing. So he brings all of Israel together, and he does just that. He has good intentions. But there's something lacking in his attitude, and that is reverence and fear. See, the Ark of God was a symbol of God's presence with his people, the holy, almighty God who is not like man, sinful man. And what you may not realize is that in the law, God actually gave very detailed instructions on how he wanted his people to deal with the ark. So there was this specific group of Israelites, they were called the Levites, and they were charged with dealing with the ark. And then there was a specific group of Levites that were called the Kohathites, and they were actually in charge of moving the ark. That was their job. And if you want to read about it, it's in Numbers 4, you can find out exactly what they were supposed to do, but I'll give you kind of a Cole's Notes version. First thing they were supposed to do when moving the ark is they were supposed to take down this shielding curtain around it and place it over top of the ark. And then after they had done that, they were supposed to take this covering that was made of leather and put that over top of the covering. And then after that, they were supposed to take this blue cloth covering and put that over top of the leather covering. So there were these three layers of covers. And then there were these big rings on the bottom that poles, these wooden poles went through, and the Levites were supposed to use these poles and carry the ark on their shoulders. This is how God commanded his people to do it. So not only did David, the leader of all of this, neglect to obey God's commands from the law, he also followed the example of a pagan nation with how to transport it. If you remember in the background I gave you at the start, when the Philistines had enough, they took the ark and they put it on a cart and they put it behind oxen and they sent it on its way. If you remember reading at the beginning of chapter 6 here, how does David do it? He takes it and he puts it on an ark or on a cart behind two oxen, and that's how they move it. So David is actually following the example of a pagan nation rather than obeying what God has commanded him to do. David had a sincere heart and genuine desire to worship God, but he was lacking reverence and fear. And the truth is, he wasn't the only one, right? All of Israel was gathered there as well, and we also find that in 1 Chronicles, it tells us that many of the people that were gathered there were Levites, and yet none of the Levitical laws were being followed. You know, something really interesting to note, because we like to focus on God's judgment here on Uzzah, is that in the law, it actually says that no one is even allowed to look upon the ark, except for Aaron and his sons. The ark was inside the Holy of Holies in the tabernacle, where no Israelites were allowed to go. No one was even supposed to look at the ark. So they were carrying this ark uncovered on a cart, and all of Israel was there, and God, all of Israel was walking in sin as they were disobeying God's law in the first place right there. So God was actually gracious with Israel in not judging them all. And Uzzah reaching out his hand and touching the cart was kind of like the last straw. He knew better. He would have been a Levite charged with taking care of that. So Uzzah is struck dead on the spot. And there's this very important response in the heart of David. And it says, he feared the Lord. As I would assume, probably all of Israel did. Witnessing that, seeing that happen. And so David fears the Lord, and then he decides, I'm a sinful man too. How can the ark come to me? And so on their way, they find this Levite's house. His name's Obed-Edom. And we find in 1 Chronicles that he was a Levite. And they take the ark to his house, and they leave it there, and then they go back. David's had enough. He's like, I can't do this. So then we go on in the story, verses 12 and 13. Say this. Then King David was told, the Lord has blessed Obed-Edom's household and everything he's done because of the ark of God. So David went there and brought the ark of God from the house of Obed-Edom to the city of David with a great celebration. After the men who were carrying the ark of the Lord had gone six steps, David sacrificed a bull and a fattened calf. So David hears that this guy who's got the ark, his whole life is being blessed. It's only there for 3 months, and it doesn't tell us what that means, but this man's whole life is being blessed. So David hears this and is like, so maybe it would be a good thing if I had God's ark here in Jerusalem. So he decides to do it again. But this time, things were very different. It doesn't look a ton different in the passage that we just read, but there's a parallel passage in 1 Chronicles 15 that tells the same story. Except in between the two attempts at bringing the ark back, it tells us what happens in between. And here's what happens. If you want to read it, you can. 1 Chronicles 15. But basically, David goes and he brings all these Levites together and he confesses and he says, it's our fault that Uzzah died. It's our fault that God burst out in anger towards us because we did not obey his law. We chose to do it our own way and not the way that God had commanded us. And so then he says, we're going to try again. But this time, you Levites, I want you to go and consecrate yourselves. Get yourselves right before God, and we're going to go back, and we're going to do it right this time. And so we find that they do go back. and they get all of Israel together again. Only this time, they do it the way that God has commanded them. And even more, because what we read, it says that they had walked six steps. They picked up the ark, they walked six steps, and then David stopped everything. And they had a sacrifice. They sacrificed before the Lord as this symbol that God's presence was with them, and God is holy, and they weren't to take that lightly. This was a very different attitude than the first time that they tried to do it. It was a complete shift in attitude. You know, David still had a sincere heart and a genuine desire for God, but the difference this time is that those things were accompanied by fear, which led him into obedience. David, being a man after God's own heart, made his whole life about worshiping God. But what he understood is that worship is not simply about adoration or celebration. One of the most important ways that we worship God is through obedience. See, David was genuine and sincere, but he was walking in disobedience to what God had commanded him. And God needed to remind him and all of Israel just who he is, and that he calls for the obedience of his people. So what we learn about worship from this is that worshiping God means obeying God. Worshiping God isn't just celebrating or praising him. Worshiping God means saying, "You are Lord," and walking in obedience to what he's said. Here's the beautiful thing. One of the things I love about this story is that this happens. David fears God and changes the way they do it the second time they follow God's commands and they have this sacrifice and stuff. But it doesn't all of a sudden just become this like somber event. We go on in verse 14 and 15. It says this: "And David danced before the Lord with all his might, wearing a priestly garment. So David and all of the people of Israel brought up the ark of the Lord with shouts of joy and the blowing of ram's horns." David, once again, just like the first time, was dancing like a fool and praising God and worshiping God. And all of Israel was joining in with him. You know, at this moment, David was like the ultimate worship leader, as all of Israel was there watching him. They saw his devotion and his adoration of God and couldn't help but praise with him. Not praise him, but praise with him. They went up with shouts of joy alongside him. That's what a good worshiper does. And that's another thing that we learn about worship, is that although it's not everything that it is, worshiping God means celebrating and praising him for what he's done. And that's what David was doing here, as well as walking in obedience. You know, this is kind of a side note, but I think it's really cool. A true worshiper of God is an accidental worship leader. You know, when other people see your worship, whether it's praise, celebration, confession, obedience, thanksgiving, they are more easily drawn into those things as well. When they saw that in David, they couldn't help but praise God with him. A true worshiper is like an accidental worship leader. And David led all of Israel in this praise and celebration of what God had done. And we're going to come back to this. But the story goes on. So as we continue, verse 16 till the end of the chapter, it says this: "But as the ark of the Lord entered the city of David, Michal, the daughter of Saul, looked down from her window. When she saw King David leaping and dancing before the Lord, she despised him. They brought the ark of the Lord and set it in its place inside the special tent David had prepared for it. And David sacrificed burnt offerings and peace offerings to the Lord. When he had finished his sacrifices, David blessed the people in the name of the Lord of heaven's armies. Then he gave to every Israelite man and woman in the crowd a loaf of bread, a cake of dates, and a cake of raisins. Then all the people returned to their homes. When David returned home to bless his own family, Michal, the daughter of Saul, came out to meet him. She said in disgust, How distinguished the king of Israel looked today, shamelessly exposing himself to the slave girls like any vulgar person might do. And David retorted to Michael, I was dancing before the Lord who chose me above your father and all his family. He appointed me as leader of Israel, the people of the Lord, so I celebrate before the Lord. Yes, and I am willing to look even more foolish than this, even to be humiliated in my own eyes, but by these slave girls you spoke of, I will be held in honor. We find here the opposite reaction from those who, you know, were led into worship by David, and that is those who judge from afar. But here's a couple things that I notice about this passage. The first one is this. David's wife, Michal, she's waiting, you know, where in their house as they come back into Jerusalem, watching from her window, which means that she didn't go with them to bring the ark back. All of Israel, it says, got together to do this, but the wife of David didn't go. Why? I think that shows us a little bit about her heart as we go on. The second thing is, twice the text mentions her, but neither time does it call her David's wife. Both times it says Michal, the daughter of Saul. Why is that? We'll come back to that as well. So basically what happens is this massive celebration makes its way into the city. And David stops when they get there, and he continues in this time of worship with sacrifice. And then he blesses all the people and goes around handing food out to everyone. And this is where, in my opinion, David does something really bad. While the people are all probably standing around hungry, looking for food, he comes around with the impression that he's going to satisfy their hunger, but instead, he gives them cake with raisins. Yuck. Those poor people probably thought they were going to get cake with chocolate chips. It's the worst. After this amazing day of worship and celebration, David gives everyone raisins, and then the text says that they all go home. Which makes sense. That's a great way to ruin a party. Sorry, enough about raisins. So David goes home, and he finds his wife waiting for him. And I think at this part of the story, if we're honest, as much as we want to relate to David in this story, we probably find ourselves relating with Michal, judging. But she says this to him in her most sarcastic voice. How the king of Israel honored himself today, shamelessly exposing himself to the servant girls like any pagan would do. See, Michal had said, despises David. And I think it's because she doesn't understand him. See, David's heart is wholly devoted to God. The most important love in his life is God. And Michael's heart is not wholly devoted to God. And likely, she probably wants David's heart to be wholly devoted to her. And so she despises him, which is ironic. The most praiseworthy part of David's character, his heart of complete worship, is what his wife despises in him. David's response is really interesting. He says, I was dancing before the Lord who chose me above your father and his family. Maybe a little like slight there. He appointed me as the leader of Israel, the people of the Lord, so I celebrate before the Lord. And I'm willing to look even more foolish than this. You know, we have to understand that history I gave about David, you know, he was promised decades before this to become the king of Israel. And that wasn't just this simple thing where it's like God anointed him king and then he became king. It was decades later, and in between those times, his life was filled with trials. He was constantly on the run. And King Saul was hunting him. And by the way, David refused to kill King Saul because David could have killed King Saul and then taken the kingship as his own because it was rightfully his. But he didn't. He didn't kill King Saul. He waited patiently for God and his timing. And it took a long time. When Saul finally dies, David's best friend also dies with him, Jonathan. And now that Saul's dead, maybe David thinks, okay, maybe God is going to give me the kingdom now. But Saul's evil son crowns himself king. And in the next 7 years, there's civil war, and David is forced to fight against his own people, the ones that he desires to be king over. So you can understand, when David finally becomes king, he's been waiting patiently for this for decades. So when he brings the Ark of the Covenant to Israel, or to Jerusalem, and he's dancing like a fool before the Lord, you can understand why he's so excited. He has waited patiently, and God proved himself to be faithful. And he is praising God for it. And he says he's willing to look even more foolish than this in his own eyes or in the eyes of the world. And I think we learned something about worship there as well. And that is that worship is for God alone. You can't fear man and worship God. If David was concerned with the opinion of man, he wouldn't have danced and worshiped the way that he did. He would have tried to act distinguished like Michael wanted him to. But he wasn't concerned with man and fearing man. And so he acted like a fool. David was offering a fool's worship to God. Nothing great in and of itself. And guess what? It was a beautiful offering to God. As we look in the very next chapter after this, chapter 7, God brings this word to David through the prophet Nathan. And it's one of the most important promises and prophecies in the whole Bible. It says this in 2 Samuel 7, 11 to 16. The Lord declares to you David, the Lord will make a house for you. When your time comes and you rest with your fathers, I will raise up after you your descendant who will come from your body, and I will establish his kingdom. He is the one who will build a house for my name, and I will establish his kingdom forever. I will be his father, and he will be my son. When he does wrong, I will discipline him with a rod of men and blows for mortals, but my faithful love will never leave him as it did when I removed it from Saul, whom I removed from before you. Your house, your kingdom will endure before me forever, and your throne will be established forever. God makes this huge promise to David that someone from his family is going to be on Israel's throne forever. But even more than that, this is a prophecy about Jesus. More than that, he says to David that from your line, the Messiah is going to come and he's going to reign forever. What a promise. This is the guy that just a few verses before this was dancing like an idiot in front of all of Israel. So why would God choose this guy? Well, here's the truth. God's kingdom is an upside-down kingdom. Almost everything that seems wise in the thinking of the world, God has flipped upside down for his kingdom. It's kind of a kingdom of fools. No offense. And Paul describes it like this in 1 Corinthians 1:27. He says, see, God chose the foolish things of the world to shame the wise. And God chose the weak things of the world to shame the strong. See, in this story, Michael thought she was the wise one. But she had no idea how foolish she was being. And the story actually ends, I didn't read the last line of the chapter. The story actually ends with this really sad line that says, and Saul's daughter Michael had no children to the day of her death. Now, I'm not sure if it's saying that God made her barren and she couldn't have children, or if after this time, this conflict, David and her were never intimate again. It doesn't say. But either way, this was the end of Saul's line. God had rejected Saul, and he'd chosen David, and Michael was Saul's daughter in every way. And I think that's why the writer actually identifies her not as David's wife, but as the daughter of Saul. She was just like him in the hardness of her heart. So that brings us to this. What about us? What kind of worship do we bring to God? You know, what kind of worshiper are you? You might have a sincere and a genuine heart to know God, but are you walking in obedience to his word, to what he has called you to? Because worshiping God, it means obeying God. And you may have found a lot of success in your life, maybe career or family or socially, and who gets the credit for that? Is it you? Or like David, do you understand that everything he had was a gift from God? Because worshiping God means celebrating what he's done, praising him for what he's done. And maybe you look like a pretty good person on the outside. You might look like you've got things all together. That's what the Pharisees looked like. Are you living to please man instead of God? What we learn from David's life is that worship is for God, and we can't fear man and worship God. I'm going to invite the worship team to come up. As we ponder this question of who do we worship? Do we worship God or man? God or self? You know, in this story, David acted in sincerity. And he also acted in obedience. And you know what? God chose to do amazing things in him and through him. And God wants to do amazing things in us and through us. And you know, when we come to church on a Sunday, we get together and we sing these songs about God, and we call it our time of worship. And that's true. But worship is so much bigger than just that. God isn't simply asking you to sing on a Sunday. He's asking you to be a person of worship, to live a life of worship. And what we do on Sunday morning is like an overflow of that. The life of worship that we live to God. You know, he's asking you to celebrate his work in your life, to point other people to him, to obey his word, to live in thankfulness. That's worship. We're going to end with a time of singing now. And I don't want you to just see this, these songs that we're going to sing now, as your complete act of worship that you offer to God. Rather, let's let these songs and the truth about God in these songs remind us who he is and what he is worthy of in our lives.
Thanks so much for joining us today. We trust you have been encouraged and challenged in your faith journey. If you're desiring prayer, want more information on our church, want to partner with us, or be involved in any way, please go to our website at mountoliveefc.com. We'll see you next time.